Canon ImagePress C910 series is suitable for smaller business environments due to its compact footprints and intuitive operation. It offers smaller businesses a cost-effective solution for high-quality digital print on demand in-house. From marketing collateral to customized booklets and even short-run promotional packaging, the ImagePress opens a world of creativity, flexibility, and performance. Find out more at www.canon.co.za.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Applecast. My name's Clinton. Joining me today is Brendan.
Hello.
And Robin.
How's it going?
I'm good, and you guys? We're just going to get right into things because important stuff happened last night with Samsung. Brendan was our man on the ground. He's going to fill us in on some new devices.
Yeah. Firstly, Samsung is far, guys. Like, wow. It like took me an hour to get home at like midnight at night, which was crazy. But anyway,
in Santon's defense, Brendan, you live very far away.
No, Santon lives far away from me. That's the actual truth. I live on the West Rand, for anybody that's wondering. Anyway, Samsung Note 10. So last night we went to Santon. We had a lovely dinner with Samsung, and then we got to see the new Note 10. Which is quite a interesting phone. So, as you know, the Note is Samsung's like premium model. It fetches the highest price. It's got the latest tech in it, and this is no different. So, this year's iteration houses the seven nanometer Exynos 9825 processor. That has a max clock of 2.7 gigahertz, which is pretty good. And then that goes up to 2.8 gigahertz, which is pretty decent. I mean, we're pushing like the sort of desktop space at the moment, which is really interesting. You also get a Bluetooth-enabled S Pen. You get up to 12 gigs of RAM. There is 256 gigs of internal storage. There does seem to be talk of a 512 gig, but that's unclear whether that's coming to South Africa. But you can have up to 1 terabyte of additional storage added to it. It's also got USB on the go, so you can plug in extra storage via a flash drive if you really, really need it. It's running Android 9.0. It's got three cameras, a 16 megapixel with a f2.2, a 12 megapixel with f1.5, and then a second 12 megapixel with f2.1. So you get three cameras. Up front, you've got a 10 megapixel selfie camera. And yeah, there are two iterations. Sorry, one last thing. There are two iterations, which is a 6.3 inch. And then there is a larger 6.8 inch display. So let's chat a bit about the phone now that we've covered the technical details. Not much has changed from last year. Sorry, I didn't even mention battery. The Note 10 houses a 3,500 milliamp per hour battery, and then the Note 10 Plus has a 4,300 milliamp hour battery, which is huge. It's massive.
Jeez. These phones are so big, and that's a massive battery.
Yeah. There is a 5G version. We'll not be getting that in South Africa for obvious reasons, but we will be getting the LTE version, which boasts download speeds of up to 2 gigabits per second. I don't know if any of the local networks are able to support that off the top of my head. Right, so let's chat a bit about the phone. It is larger, but it feels really comfortable in your hand. I'm currently still using the S10 Plus, and that phone is really unwieldy at times. It just feels very big in your hand. Yesterday, when we had some hands-on time with the Note, I actually preferred the Note 10 Plus because it just feels nicer in your hand, despite being a bigger display. something that I am going to miss a lot is the dedicated Bixby button, because that's gone now. Now your power button and unlock button triples as your Bixby button as well. So this is where I kind of start to question Samsung's thinking. The power button, if you hold it when the phone is off, it'll switch the phone on. If you hold it when the phone is on, it launches Bixby. To switch the phone off by holding a button, you need to press volume down and the power button. Which is just... What?
It seems... Yeah.
It's
not a fan of that.
It's so silly. And the reason I say that is because for so many years, we have learned that holding the power button turns the phone off. Now, when you do that, you're sitting on the plane and the air hostess or air host is saying, "Ah, could you please turn off your phone?" And you hold the button, it's going to launch Bixby. And nobody wants that. Absolutely nobody. So that irks me just a little bit. Then as well, and I'm going to harp on about this until the day I die, they ditched the 3.5mm jack. So the director of integrated mobility at Samsung, Justin Hume, said that the reason they've ditched the headphone jack is to make space for a bigger battery. Which, I mean, this is all well and good, but I just... Like, okay, so the reason this irritates me is there's a YouTuber called Parts Unknown, I believe, who lives in Shenzhen in China. And what he does is he hacks tech together. He built an iPhone on his own, but one of my favorite videos of his is he put a headphone jack back into an iPhone. It took a bit of clever engineering, but he was able to do it. And it shocks me that some dude in China is able to do that, but Samsung, with its unlimited resources, is unable to keep a headphone jack in a smartphone. I know everybody's going to say to me, "Oh, but Bluetooth, you know, Bluetooth is something that you need to consider. It's more and more people are using it." Bluetooth for earphones is stupid, all right? It's another thing that you're going to forget to charge. Like, I understand that it's gotten better. The tech has gotten better. But, like, things that I have to charge, I inevitably forget to charge. I have 3 battery banks. Do you know how many of them are charged? None. It's just... I feel like it's a silly decision.
I think it's more of a... like a fashion statement instead of any tech problems. I'm sure the engineers at Samsung were like, "You know, we can put it in. I mean, we can do it." And they're like, "No, everybody's getting rid of it. So are we." I'm not calling anybody a liar, but I ain't calling you a truther. yeah, it's just silly, and it sounds like an excuse. Man, just give us the jack. Do you know if the box of the new Note has a converter in it, Type-C to the jack?
Samsung copied Apple on that as well, because Apple has since started putting a dongle in. The Samsung Note 10 will not ship with the dongle. You'll have to buy that as an additional purchase, which is a bit not very nice. Yeah. Like, I understand that you want to make things, you want to push the envelope a little bit, but on that same note, like, I as a user am now inconvenienced. I can't use the headphones that I like to use. I have to go out and either buy a dongle or buy a pair of Bluetooth earphones. I understand that this phone is like $18,999 starting price. So, yeah, you should be able to afford a dongle. But on the same note, like, it's a little bit nasty to say to folks, "Well, we're ditching the headphone jack and you have to buy the dongle as well." Like, that's so Apple. I'm struggling to see that this is actually Samsung making these decisions. Like you say, it's probably a fashion statement thing where, well, everybody's doing it. Well, if everybody was jumping off a bridge, would you do it as well?
Was it Google who made fun of Apple for getting rid of the jack, and then they got rid of the jack?
Yeah, and Samsung as well. One of the MC at the event, Maps Mapunyane, he was like, he even quipped to it to Justin. He was like, Well, you know, the one bragging right I had is now gone against Apple users. And I was like, yeah, I get it, man. I get it.
Laughter.
Yeah, it was. People did laugh because it's the truth.
Oh my God. It's so silly. Okay, so I want to talk about a few things. So you said that you like the bigger one more, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder if you'll feel that way after it's been in your pocket for a year. So just for context, I've got the Note 9, which is by far and away the biggest phone I've ever had. And I really do love it, but it's too big. It's just too big to be a normal phone. And yeah, it's good when I'm lying in bed at home watching a movie on it because, you know, you got the big screen. But then I go out and it's just a huge phone. And listen, I don't wear tight clothes, but even in like normal pairs of jeans, a lot of the times the top of this phone sticks out the top of my pocket, which I hate. And I'm a little bit paranoid and I'm like, somebody's going to come past and pluck it right out of my pocket. So yeah, like you said, it's all well and good to be feel good in your hands, but when we do get our review unit in, I don't know if you're going to feel that way after having to lug it around for a while.
So I'm using the S10 Plus at the moment, and I have been for a couple of months now. And what I have found is that this phone does not live in my pocket. I'll put it in my pocket when I'm like trying to open the door or getting into the car or something like that. But inevitably what happens is I'll walk around with the phone in my hand. Because it's not comfortable to have it in my pocket because it's a big phone. And I'm always worried, like you, that somebody's just going to walk past and grip it out of my pocket because it sticks out. It is a pain point for big phones.
Yeah. The S10 Plus and the Note 9 are actually very much not the same, but they've got the same size screen, 6.4 inches. And the Note 9 is a few millimeters longer. But yeah, it's a big problem when you got to put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
And I don't carry it around in my hand all the time, but I do it sometimes because like you said, it's such a big phone and it's so heavy. How big is the Note 10 Plus? That thing is huge.
So it's 6.8 inches display. In terms of size, it's 72 by 162.3 by 7.9 millimeters and weighs 196 grams.
My gosh. Okay, so I'm just going to load up GSM Arena. So if anyone's never heard of this site before, it's really good. I'm just going to compare it to the Note 9 while we speak about other things.
Yeah, so I actually just want, while you're doing that, I wanted to mention something about the S Pen. So the S Pen now has a functionality called Air Gestures or something to that effect. Essentially, what it allows you to do is take the S Pen and control your phone from a distance. So the way they showed this off was browsing through your gallery. So you swipe left in the air with the S Pen and then it'll move your gallery along. So this seems like a stupid feature, but it actually has a bit of a use now. So Samsung also announced that DeX is changing completely. You no longer need a peripheral in the form of a USB to HDMI turnaround or that massive dock that you used to have. Now all you need is the USB Type-C cable that comes with your phone. You connect it to a laptop or a PC, a desktop PC, and it essentially launches like a pretty legit phone browser as a desktop window. So it looks like a desktop, it acts like a desktop, but really it's just a glorified phone explorer app. But from this, you can transfer files back and forth. You can do presentations. It's really, really well thought out, and it's really slick as well. So in that aspect, I can see the S Pen being used to kind of run a presentation. While you're talking, you have the S Pen out, and you just swipe left and right on your presentation, which I think is really cool. It kind of extends and actually makes that... The Note is a productivity tool, a reality. Because now you don't need to carry around a mouse and a keyboard with your phone. You can literally just plug it into any laptop, download the app, and start using it as if it was a PC, which I think is really, really, really cool. Limitations on that, your phone's internet will be used. So if you're on data, it will use your phone's data. If you're on Wi-Fi, it will use the Wi-Fi. So it doesn't share the notebook's internet connection. That's it. You can still take calls, you can still send text messages, and you can launch apps. So if you use Instagram, you'll know that uploading photos online is pretty much impossible without some plugins. But now what you can do is you can connect your Note 10 to your laptop or your PC, and you can transfer files from your notebook onto the phone and upload them to Instagram instantaneously right there from the same window, which I think is probably one of the cooler features.
I wish Instagram just had a regular desktop. So I brought up GSM Arena here. They've got a compare tool, which is really cool. And if this stuff is right, how's this, Brendan? So even though the Note 10 Plus, that is the biggest one, is very slightly bigger in terms of dimensions, it's actually, so that's like X and Y, right?
Yeah.
It's actually thinner in width, and it's lighter than the Note 9. How's that? Wow. So,
that's
again,
pretty good, Samsung.
Yeah. So I assume this is because, you know, they got rid of the bezels. And again, it's got a bigger screen, but it's only slightly bigger in terms of the overall dimensions. So the Note 10 Plus, again, remember, that's the bigger one. It's 196 grams, while the phone I have right me with me here, the Note 9, is 201 grams.
Gee.
And now it gets even more interesting if you compare the Note 10, which is the quote-unquote smaller one, with the Note 9. Those two phones have similar screens, right?
Yeah.
But the new Note 10 is smaller in terms of overall dimensions,
It's
much lighter. It's 168 grams compared to 201. Now, that might not sound like a lot, but again, when you have this in your pocket, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's like 20-something grams, right? Just under 20-something grams.
That's pretty incredible. I wish that they had talked this up a little bit more during their presentation, because that's really, really good.
Yeah. This is like an effect of having no bezels, right?
Yeah.
You can have the same size screen, or you can have a bigger screen while still having the same overall size and weight. That's really impressive. I actually didn't know there was such a difference in terms of overall size and weight. We should have our review unit of... do you know if we're getting the Note 10 or the Note 10 Plus, Brendan?
In South Africa?
No, for our review unit.
We will probably get the Note 10 Plus, but that's up in the air in the moment. We haven't confirmed anything with Samsung South Africa.
Whichever one we get, it's going to be really interesting to have them both like in our hands. To feel the difference. I'm really surprised that both of them are lighter than last year's model. That's a real surprise.
So
it's a very welcome surprise.
So just to wrap up, the Note 10 starts at 18,999 with contract pricing starting at 899 per month. And then the Note 10 Plus starts at 22,999 rand. And contract pricing is 999 per month. Both phones launch on the 30th of August, though if you pre-order, you will get them on the 23rd of August, which coincides with the US release date. Pre-orders open today. We always suggest waiting until you get or there's more information about the phones, get a review out, that sort of stuff before you make a decision about buying a phone. Of course, if you are a Samsung Note fan and you've been waiting for this, I'm sure that my words will mean nothing to you, but still, I feel it's important to mention that don't pre-order things, rather just wait until you get a review and you know the whole story. Remember, the Note 7 is my
so I just want to end off by saying two things. We've got a little dedicated subsite on Hypertext where you can see all the information about this phone. And also, the Note 9 should be going down in price very soon.
Oh, that's a good point. Very good point. Yeah.
So once we have, you know, all our tests and everything done, it will be interesting to go back and see. I mean, we saw this last year when the Note 9 came out. The prices of last year's models, they get reduced by a lot. Mm. And then you can find a lot of them on the secondhand market as well.
Delivering game-changing productivity, true flexibility, and pin-sharp quality printing, Canon C910 Image Press helps SMEs maximize workflow with print speeds of up to 90 pages per minute. The C910 offers SMEs an unrivaled opportunity to bring their outsourced print jobs in-house, meaning that they have greater control of costs, quality, and design. Find out more about the C910 at www.canon.co.za.
I played a game from more than a decade ago, from 15 years ago to be precise. It's called Metal Wolf Chaos XD. Yes, that's really its name. So, quick history lesson of this game. It came out in 2004 for the original Xbox. That's the first Xbox, not the Xbox One. It's very confusing. It's very strange because Xbox has very little presence in Japan, even though they're available there officially. But it was made by From Software, the guys who made the Armored Core series, the guys who made the Souls games. This was before the Souls games in 2004. And this game was, it wasn't a myth, but it was kind of this cult game because it was very hard to get your hands on a copy of it and play. To do that, you'd need to find a very rare, expensive copy on eBay. And then you'd need to find a Japanese version of the an Xbox, the original one. And those are very expensive, or you'd have to kind of do some modifications to get it working. And this game kind of became famous on the back of YouTube and the back of people getting their hands on these very exclusive versions of it and playing it and putting it out there. So it was announced at Devolver Digital, the guys, you know, for Broforce and Hotline Miami and all those awesome games. They had, I'm not sure what the licensing agreement is, but they would be publishing a new version of it called Metal Wolf Chaos XD. The XD is the signifier here that this is the new version. It's out now on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Again, that's the new Xbox, not the old one. And what they did is they updated the graphics a bit. So it still looks very dated. It still looks very, very dated. This isn't a remaster. It's a re-release. So you have to keep that in mind. And the other thing they did, aside from making it more easier to buy and to play, they also updated it for modern graphics. So if you buy it now and play it, you're not going to get a 4x3 screen. You're going to get 16x9. And if I remember correctly, it does support up to 4K on PC. So I got the game in for review on PC. And on paper, this should be the best game ever, right? It's mechs. I have a deep love for mechs. I love Japanese games like this. I love From Software. I love the early 2000s, which is the best time in human history. Don't at me. And on top of all of this, it's made to be very cheesy. If you watch any trailer of this, you'll notice that the voice acting is bad. I'm not going to skirt around things. It's bad, right? But it's kind of intentional. It's in one of those camps where it's so bad it's good, but it's kind of competent at the same time. So I've been playing it, and it's just all those cool aspects that on paper would work don't work once you're playing the game. So let me start with the good things, and then I'll kind of rag on it a little bit. In terms of actual gameplay, like minute-to-minute gameplay, it's actually a lot of fun, even in 2019. You know, when I did this review, I didn't worry about the meta stuff, right? I didn't worry that this is a re-release from a different time. I didn't worry about the history of it and how it was a cult classic and everything. I just worried about playing it there and now, right? In terms of that, it's actually fun because controlling your mech is, it feels good because the mech is, it's in a really nice place where it feels heavy, like you're piloting this big hunking walk of metal, but it doesn't feel so heavy that it's bothersome, right? You don't have tank controls, as people usually call them. The shooting is simple but satisfying because you get a lot of weapons. I think there's about a dozen different types, and you keep them all in this like backpack. It's these two pods that sit on the back of your mech, and then you can switch out what you use. So if you want to have two big chain guns, you can do that. If you want to have a massive sniper rifle that takes up both hands, you can do that. If you want to have a missile launcher to take care of the big guys on one hand and then a machine gun on the other side to take care of the smaller guys who don't have armor, you can do that. The problem with all these systems is that the game wants you to play it in a very specific way. It wants you to have a gun to destroy armored targets on one hand and a gun to destroy non-armored targets on the other. And I won't get into too much how it forces you to play like that, but it's at odds with itself, right? On the one hand, it wants you to customize and play how you want, but on the other hand, it structures itself in a way that says, no, you have to go like this, or you're going to fail the mission, or you're not going to go very well, or you won't be able to rescue enough hostages to get a good bonus at the end of the game. So it's very stifling in that regard, and it made me kind of frustrated to the point where you'll eventually pick up on the, you know, the optimal way to load out your mech, and then you'll stop experimenting, which is, it's a crying shame. It makes no sense to me why they'll give you so many options and then railroad you into playing a certain way. And making all of this worse is the fact that most of the enemies are just the worst kind of bullet sponges, right? For some reason in this game, you do get to fight helicopters and other mechs and these big tank things. But do you know what you're shooting most of the time, Brendan? Buildings. It absolutely boggles my mind. So most of the missions have an objective. And I would say about half of them are destroy the target. And the targets are always buildings. And I don't know if you've ever tried to destroy a building with a machine gun, but it takes a very long time to do. So what happens is you load up your two missile launchers, you go sit behind a building, and you just hold fire until they fall down, which isn't fun. And there's so many little niggles, like there's landmines, right, that some enemies will drop. And they perfectly blend into the ground, and they take off a hell of a lot of your health every time you step on them. And the game gives you no tutorialization around them. They're just there. And I failed this one mission, and I spoke to some other reviewers who also got the game. They didn't know the landmines even existed. They're just like, yeah, on this one mission, I kept losing health for some reason. And I had no idea why. I was like, did you know that there's mines? And they said no. So that's irritating. And then there's bugs as well. On some levels, enemies can just shoot you through walls. I was fighting this giant. It was like an Osprey, the plane, but it had lots of guns on it. And some soldiers were just shooting me through the walls like it was nothing. It was kind of funny. And then on top of all of that, there's also sound issues. So, Brendan, this one will really irk you because I know you're a stickler for sound and music and stuff like that. The balancing of the audio is just completely glitched out and bonkers. The machine guns have almost no sound at all, to the point where if you have your volume at a certain level, you can't even hear them firing. And when you do hear them firing, they sound like Nerf darts. And then when you defeat an enemy and there's a cutscene, the explosion sounds that they play are so loud that I thought I was going to have hearing loss. So the game is good on paper, but the design and technical parts of it are really poor. So I've got a full review on all of this. You can read it. But the bottom line is I gave it a 5 out of 10. The only people I recommend to this is if you're an absolute diehard From Software fan. If you've been watching this game, you know, since it came out in 2004 and you've always wanted to play it, but you couldn't because of the hardware restrictions, now you can. But for everybody else, I don't think you should play it. I don't know if you have any questions about this, Brendan.
Yeah. So do you think that a lot of these issues stem from the fact that it's an old game and they're trying to preserve some of the magic? I'm not saying that they kept the bugs and stuff from the original game, but do you think that by trying to preserve some of their core gameplay, that kind of led to some of the stuff being under par?
So, yeah, I think, like, the problems with the landmines and the mission layout, which is irritating, I do think that Devolver, and there was a third-party developer who helped bring it to the new systems. I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but I do think they looked at some of these and they thought, you know, we could change this because it's not the best in terms of modern design or whatever, and they left them in. But that doesn't change the fact that it's not fun, right? So, yeah, I do understand the reason for some of this, but it's not an excuse, and it still affects my recommendation to pick this up in 2019 and to play it. So in terms of design, I do think they left some of that in. But in terms of the bugs, like the audio issues, again, the audio issues are incredibly bad. That's, I don't think there's an excuse for that. That should have been fixed. So, yeah, I do understand what you're saying, but it's still a problem. And okay. Yeah, so I think everyone should check out my review, you know, not to pump it out or anything, but if you watch just like 60 seconds of the trailer, you'll see what the game is about, and then you can go from there. But just keep in mind that at the end of the day, I'm not going to recommend it because of those problems. Yeah, it's a crying shame. On paper, it's a really good game, but in practice, it's just not.
Oh, well, that's a pity. I mean, yeah. I know a lot of folks were looking forward to that. And yeah. For it to be a bit of a fizzle and a miss is a bit sad.
And I think a lot of people have been waiting since like 2004 are going to be like, I don't know what I expected.
I mean, at least you get to play it now, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
100%. Like I actually mentioned this at the end of my review. This game is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I think if you're somebody who all they wanted from this game was the ability to play it, then in your eyes, it succeeds, right?
Yeah.
Because in 2019, you can buy it off Steam, you can download it, and you can play it. And that's not something you could do in previous years. That's not something you could do last month. So for those people, it is going to be good because it accomplishes its one goal of booting up and being playable. So for those people, it will be enough. But yeah, I think a lot of people are coming into it expecting a lot of fun and a lot of depth and whatever are going to be disappointed, which is sad. But, you know, there's thousands of other games people could be playing. And it's good that this game exists is the end of the story, really. It's absolutely good that Devolver kind of not rescued it, but, I don't know, reincarnated it for modern players.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my review of it. You can go check out the full written thing. And Brendan, you're going to introduce us to this last segment and kind of sign us out.
So as you heard at the top of this podcast, this is obviously sponsored by Canon. Thank you to Canon and Canon's professional print division. We have Rob and Chetty, who you haven't heard from most of this podcast, chatting to Almar Kruger, who is the business development manager at Canon, and then Abdul Ghulam, who is a product manager at Canon. They'll be chatting about the ImagePress range, more specifically the ImagePress C910, and how businesses can bring printing back to their business. So listen out for that. But I think we're going to sign off right at the end now. So thanks for having me, Clinton. It was
it's a pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. And we will see you guys next week for myself, for Brendan, for Robin, for everybody else here at HTC and Canon. We'll see you guys. Bye.
Hi, this is Robin reporting for Hypertix, and I'm here today with the Canon Pro Print team. And we're here to discuss the ImagePress and also printing in general. So joining today is Abdul and Almar, and we're going to discuss what's happening in the print presses. You guys recently essentially launched a new range into the country or updated the range. But before we get into that, I was wanting to perhaps get your feedback in terms of what the local printing scene is like. More recently, we've seen a number of print publications shutter their doors, which is unfortunate, but it obviously has changed the landscape. I wanted to perhaps get your feedback on what your thinking is around printing in South Africa.
Well, I think printing in South Africa, you'd be 100% correct. There's certain markets that they take a bit of strain. But we find that print is continuously changing and ever-evolving. And companies that seem to adapt to the change, especially looking into digital equipment, seem to be thriving a little bit better. I also think that broader product ranges and some diversification is key to the success of printing in South Africa. But I think we've definitely seen If you look at device sales or unit sales, we've seen a decline at the start of the year, but a rapid incline as we're heading into the second part. So it seems that print itself is still well in the country.
And is that increase as a result of something that happened in the industry or certain events coming up?
Well, I think in South Africa, we always link to what happens with the economy and, and you know, it isn't always ideal. We've got a fluctuating exchange rate that and buyer confidence also fluctuates quite a bit. And I think, especially with the election at the start of the year, I think there was a lot of holding back on initial investment. But like I say, since election, actually, we've definitely seen an incline, especially in the private sector.
Perfect. And I mean, you kind of mentioned that there was a little bit of uncertainty. Now that we have, I guess, a bit more certainty, are companies now looking to invest a bit more in terms of printing?
That's exactly right, Jim.
And obviously we're here today to talk about the ImagePress range. Can you run through the range for me and just tell me that I think there are three different models, is that correct, that you guys are looking to print?
Well, at the moment on color, the ImagePress range, we've only got two specific models. We've got the ImagePress C910 and we've also got the ImagePress C10000. The ImagePress C910 is what we would call a light to mid production engine. That is application and volume based, as well as productivity. And then the step up to our mid production engine, which is the C10000. Both these devices comes in different speed ranges. So we've got three different speed ranges on the C910, which is a 70, 80, and 90 page per minute license, essentially. And on the C10000, we've got two different licenses. We've got an 80 and 100 page per minute license, but obviously much more productive, keeps productivity on different medias. Mixed media application handles very, very well. Our new C19 is a phenomenal piece of equipment. And we're really excited about the changes that we hopefully it can bring to the printing market in South Africa.
Okay, you mentioned the C19. Is that kind of the flagship unit of the range right now?
Well, our flagship is actually the C10000, because it's the biggest catchy digital dry ink or toner-based device that we have in our range. The 910 is what we would almost our entry into production type of device. Obviously, it can handle a wide range of applications, and there's actually some applications which the 910 is stronger than the C10000, which why in Canon South Africa, we like to talk application more than actual device, because application is what's going to identify the need for what product the end user might need.
Could you unpack that a bit more in terms of applications, what the C910 is really specializing
in? Well, for example, the C910 is a lot stronger with the banner printing application. I think with the C850, the previous model, we introduced banner printing for the first time as a Canon product that can be produced by the machine. But with the additional benefits to the 910, we can now do banners up to 1.3 meters. We can print automatic duplex for banners up to 763, and we can also print banners up to 350 GSM. So that is a big plus for us. For example, that the 910, for example, would be a lot stronger than the C10000.
And are you guys finding a demand in industry for that kind of banner printing?
Ever growing.
Perfect. And if a company is kind of looking to get a new printing unit into the operation, what are some of the aspects that they need to be looking for, or what do they need to really be considering? Because these are sizable investments.
Yeah, 100%. Well, the thing is, I think what companies need to invest into or need to look at is where they want their business to go and what product can provide them the best product range or a more diverse product range. Stuff like envelope printing as standard, stuff like printing on textured medias, metallics, those type of things, synthetic medias. These things are becoming more and more important as a basic need or something that printing companies need to grow into. The days of just printing or just making paper dirty is long past. Printing companies need to look for ways in which they can make themselves unique and make their offering unique.
And I'm assuming those are key user selling points that Canon.
I wouldn't have mentioned it. Sure.
And an important thing is we look out for what the customers don't see.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of what they outsource, and we identify what they outsource and how to bring that printing in back into their business.
Do you have a few examples of it?
So basically, if they print in business cards or certificates or on textured media, and those are small little things that they're probably outsourcing on a daily basis, if it's every month or whatever it is, and we identify and look for things that they basically giving it out, outsourcing, try to bring their business back in. So they become more profitable. And the investment just looks better for them to invest into that machine.
Sure.
So it's a lot of identifying what they're outsourcing and giving them a solution that works for them.
Perfect. We've talked about the C910 quite a bit, but in terms of the ImagePress range, are there any specialized applications that we haven't mentioned that they are able to perform? We've spoken about banners, but things like car wraps or things like maybe smaller billboards, is that something that they're able to handle?
Well, car wraps, billboards, that's more of your wide format, solvent, UV gel type, mm-hmm. type of technologies. Toner-based devices really aren't in that type of market.
Sure.
What we are looking at is more, you know, stuff like book covers, corporate folders, business cards, flyers, obviously your standard print work, but also to more on the designing side of things to look at different structures of paper and,
sure.
and different types of media. But more on a cut sheet, A4, A3 or
longer sheets.
Longer
sheets. So if you're looking application wise will be your photo book covers.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's a good example. Your menus. We have clients run up to 762 in length on labels itself. They found a niche in the market and they found the machine works perfectly. So the application and what they want to achieve, their flexibility is there. And that makes it important, the flexibility for media and what you want to print.
Mm.
And that's the machine fits perfectly in there.
I also think we're also very fortunate that we've probably got one of the most extensive media ranges available on our devices or media catalogs that you can use. But also stuff like variable data printing in South Africa and certain environments, variable data printing is also strong. Our machines with the processors that they have can handle variable data very well. But something that I forgot to mention that we spoke about earlier, that was just short run magazines, for example, as an application that is quite easily handled by one of these devices.
So you're talking about like specialized publications for an expo or conference or something like that?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And obviously we're here at the showroom and lots of lovely nice printers around, but where would a potential customer be able to interact or kind of see your ImagePress range in action besides, for example, coming to the showroom? Will they be able to see it anywhere else?
Obviously, we've got an extensive range of clients already in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I would say through our direct or indirect channel, we have got account managers that does end-user visits. And like I say, once the application has been identified, then talking about the machine is a lot easier. So we first need to identify what the actual need is. Our showroom at the moment is in Johannesburg. It is, like you say, a phenomenal showroom. But we are busy investigating different alternatives to showrooms across the country and even in sub-Saharan Africa.
Perfect. And then obviously from a after-sales perspective, what kind of role does Canon play there? Because these are, like we've mentioned, very expensive machines. How does Canon assist in that regard?
So on these machines, the industry standard SLA is through our direct channel,
mm-hmm.
Which is service level agreement, which is a basic copy-click charge. But we offer that same service through our indirect channel, which is our partners and dealers and distributors.
Sure.
Obviously, Canon South Africa is only present in certain markets, very focused markets, as well as in only the metropoles. But we've got a dealer network stretching across South Africa and across sub-Saharan Africa that offer the same service and get 100% support from our service team in regards to getting their service up and running.
All right, perfect. We've mentioned kind of what the ImagePress range is focused on. In terms of speed, because we chatted a bit about specialized publications for specific events, in terms of speed, what can they handle and how important is speed for your clients?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Also a difficult one to answer, to be honest, because speed is a relative term.
Mm-hmm.
Here we like to talk more about productivity. Because obviously, no printer only does one media. No printer does only one job. The applications differ from day to day, from job to job. So we'd like to talk about throughput and also a consistent quality throughout your throughput.
Sure.
Because it doesn't warrant you printing 1,000 pages per minute, but pages 1 and pages 500 doesn't even look the same. So maintaining color consistency to us is of fundamental importance. So obviously, like I said, our machines range, the mid-production, light production engine ranges from 70, 80, and 90 pages per minute.
Mm-hmm.
But as the media increases in weight and thickness, it does drop a little bit of productivity, but that is only to maintain color consistency. I'll see 10,000, 8,000, that machine never drops productivity. It prints the majority of applications at rated speed, which is 102.4 pages per minute.
Sure.
So it is a rather productive engine.
Mm-hmm.
And also we like to talk about engine life, because at the end of the day, your investment will carry the life of the engine. Our live production engine has got a 10 million engine life, which is phenomenal for that range of device. And our C10,000 has got a 28 million life. So
so when you say 10 and 28 million, what is that in terms of prints?
That's a basic specification on A4 images being produced.
Right.
It's nothing set in stone, but it is a guideline for how long the printer should last you. So to calculate the return on investment is taking your engine life and seeing how long you can sweat it in order to get the most value for your money.
And on average, what kind, how many years are we talking about when you talk about, like, say, 10 or 28?
Well, that really depends. Once again, application.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find a company that prints 300,000 prints a month, but the application warrants a C910, which means the investment will last 3 years.
Sure.
If you take into account their engine life. So it really depends on how quickly you can reach your engine, the life of your engine, and what your application is. Like, say, if it's a banner, then moving into the 910 would be the best possible device or solution for your application. If it's a more productive, cut-sheet environment where you need to get work out as quickly as possible with high volumes, see 10,000, then we work on a 28.
It all works on basically the life of the machine,
mm-hmm.
and what we call average monthly print volume and your maximum. So we look at the clientele itself, what they print in, and is it over 24, 36, 60 months, whatever it is, and that's we will then focus on a solution, the right speed device. So it could be 70, 80, or 90 pages a minute, and we're knowing that this machine should handle those volumes per month. So that's the important thing.
So Cadence will take on more of a consulting role in that regard in terms of...
It's important because for a customer that's running volumes, that you need to do the consulting part of it, because
mm-hmm.
you need to foresee what's going to happen. If they're going to run maximum than what the machine can handle, that's where we need to advise them, because at the end of the day, it's a Canon name. It's a Canon brand, and that's important to us.
Mm. And now we've kind of chatted a bit about speed and all the different applications that the image presser engine can manage. I just want to find out, in terms of mixing and matching applications, say a job requires different types of printing applications. How well suited is the image presser engine in terms of handling those requirements?
Well, at the end of the day, the image presser engine is just a printer that can print that prints the information that's being sent to it. So depending on what type of variable software that you're running or imposing software that you're running, that is actually more key to that specific application. If you're running different applications or different media in the same job, switching between jobs, then your software is what's important. In that regard, Canon has got a suite of software that's called Prisma Sync, or the Prisma Suite, which is everything from workflow to imposing and composing, spot color checking, as well as the actual RIP or server on the device. And that is extremely strong. And that just gives us another avenue of discussion that we can have, and just, you know, increasing our value proposition to our end users by having the suite of products available.
And in terms of a compatibility, I'm assuming that solution is quite robust in terms of what it can handle.
Yeah, well, it's designed for the printing market, whether it is a CRD, corporate, or graphic arts environment. Our solutions are all custom and tailor-made for each and everyone, and customizable for each.
All right, perfect. And one of the last things I wanted to talk about was around print quality. We've spoken a bit about it briefly, but in terms of ensuring print quality, how does Canon go about doing so?
Oh,
that's priority to us.
Yeah.
So, basically, on production device, that's important. Is what's first in and last out needs to match up, and that's where we talk about color consistency. How do we make sure that the machine keeps up and the technology behind it is strong enough? So we have basically checks and balances with imprinting, where the machine will see and monitor and measure your toner particles, or what we call halftones, in between certain jobs. And that's where the C910 will measure up those and make sure that if it's, for instance, a Canon red, the Canon red starting from page 1 to 1,000 will be a red at the end of the day. So consistency of color is important to us, and that's what our customers require from us. It's basically speed and consistency.
I think if I can add to that, is that at the base, Canon is an imaging company, and we pride ourselves on image, and in essence, quality is you know,
priority.
It's our major priority. We will never compromise on quality, and that you can see in our image-based devices as well. whether it is page one to page two or through the run different applications, quality will always remain our main priority.
Perfect. And just obviously we've kind of crossed over the halfway mark of 2019, and you spoke about how there's been an increase in terms of demand. Has Canon set out any goals or any achievements in mind for the end of the year in terms of the MS Press range? Or are you guys looking for?
Well, obviously, we've got plenty of goals to increase market share, to increase a lot of things. Obviously, we're in business, and that's what we need to do. We are working on several very exciting marketing activities going into from September to end of November.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that we'll be able to make that a little bit more public as soon as everything has been finalized. But we are really excited about what we want to do. We want to bring the Image Press to the end user, and we hope to be able to confirm all the arrangements with that within the next 2 weeks. So that's essentially lots of plans, lots of exciting stuff that Canon is bringing to the table. Hopefully we can get as many eyes as possible onto our Image Press. That's our main goal. But yeah, watch this space.
With the C910, Canon has incorporated its customer-first mindset and the unique understanding of imaging color to enable operators from entry-level to the most experienced to produce brilliant output on a wide range of media while shortening the turnaround times. For more information, visit www.canon.co.za.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.